Welcome to the Engage and Empower podcast. Behind every successful company is an intentional and innovative approach to empowering your most valuable asset, your people. Join me in having conversations with people and talent leaders as we share our journeys and unpack what it takes to build strong, cohesive teams and employee experiences. From executives at early stage startups to innovators at large public companies, we'll capture the compelling stories of the people behind people teams. Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning in to the Engage and Empower podcast. I'm your host, Resika Rajagopalan, and today I am incredibly thrilled to be chatting with the VP of People at PROS, Diane Kim. Diane has over a decade of experience in the people and culture space, and I love the lens of equity and social impact she has through everything she does as a people leader. So Diane, thank you so much for making time for the show. If you wouldn't mind getting us started by giving listeners just a quick background and introduction on you and PROS, that would be great.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. Well, so I like to start off with just saying that I'm a Korean American. And I think it's really important to start with this because it's just such a core part of my current adult identity. And unfortunately, it hasn't always been a part of my identity that I've embraced. But now, you know, it's a core part of me. So I was born in Seoul in South Korea and raised in different parts of the U.S. I've lived in New York now for 4 years, which is actually the longest I've lived in one place after college. So I've moved 16 times throughout my life, initially with my family as a child, and then continued that for whatever reason into my adulthood. So I've been living sort of this transient life. I think maybe because I'm always looking for change. So I think career-wise, you know, some people live to work, others work to live. But I think regardless of people's personal philosophies around work, I think it's true that for many people, work can play a really large part in how we define ourselves, our personal identity, and our purpose in broader society. So I think work should be a place for nurturing creativity, a place to form meaningful relationships and connections to new communities. And I think also in 2020, you know, all of us, we've realized that work can become very, very personal, blurring the boundaries between home life, social life, work life. But also it can be a place where we have really personal conversations, sometimes uncomfortable conversations about race, about politics, religion, even our salaries. So these are all some of the so-called taboo topics of the past that we're having now in the workplace. So I think the workplace in its ideal state can be such a fertile ground for personal growth and development. On the other hand, you know, just one bad manager or colleague can make it really quite a nightmare. So for me, my personal purpose is to help cultivate this fertile ground, to help people achieve their greatest potential. But also we spend so much time at work. So being able to bring your true authentic self day to day can also be a sense of freedom. So more broadly speaking, like many other people, want to have a true impact on society. And I've come to realize that the corporate world has such a big part to play in societal progress. Often our workplaces are just a reflection of the positives and negatives we have in our societies. And in our capitalist economy that we live in America, let's face it, money fuels everything. And corporate America is really at the center. So in the business sector, we have feasibility experts, and these organizations actually have the financial means to make meaningful social impact. So I think the policies that we create in our workplaces as an HR team, a people and culture team, are either contributing to and perpetuating the problems that we have in our society, like racial inequity, or actually changing things for the better, for progress. So all of these things have kind of been my compass as I navigated through my career. I started working in behavioral research. I worked in marketing for a bit, and then I intentionally pivoted to HR. I spent 5 years at Boeing and then 3 years at ESOP as their head of HR for the Americas. And then I started working with startups, establishing my own consulting practice. And then finally, just about 5 months ago, I joined PROS as the VP of People and Culture.
What interesting and really empowering background. I love that. I can relate to that as well. I think, especially over the last 10 years, you've really seen the field evolve to cater to this idea that
people are not necessarily seeing their jobs as a means to live their lives. They see it very much as an integrated part of how they find meaning. And to your point around companies and corporations' responsibility in contributing to the larger mission we all have around building equity and that social responsibility piece, I think now more than ever, employees are also looking for that and customers are also looking for that in the organizations they support, because we can no longer, you know, solely rely on governments or laws to do that. It's all of our responsibility. And I love that approach that you have in the mission that you take and in the approach that you take in building your teams. How have you seen the field evolve over the last 10 years or across the various industries that you've worked in? You've worked in very different types of organizations. And so have you seen the broader industry evolve?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's changed really dramatically. I think now we see a lot of HR people professionals call themselves, you know, working in the field of people and culture. I think that field really has changed a lot over the last few decades. Like even the name has changed from, I think, you know, in the Industrial Revolution and sort of where we had factory workers, it was more personnel management, administration, and then it evolved to human resources. And now it's people, talent, and culture. So I think the name actually reflects kind of how people have viewed the function of people and culture. So whereas in the past, it was all about productivity, so like Six Sigma, process improvement, you know, performance management, I think that has all really changed over time. And I think now, especially with really this spike of startups coming into play with the business context evolving and less barriers to entry, we understand that smart people with really great ideas can start a business, but really only great leaders who can galvanize and engage a group of people to get them really behind a specific purpose or mission, that really makes that business continue to grow and thrive over many, many years. So I just think the people field plays a critical part in just doing business. And I hope that, you know, looking into the future, I think if we look at the past CEOs, where they come from, it's not typical that they come from the field of HR or people and culture. They're usually coming from marketing or finance, engineering even. So I think hopefully in the future, as we see this people and culture function evolve even further, we can see future CEOs actually come from this background as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I often think that, you know, your people leader isn't always, you know, the first or second or third person on the team. And so a lot of times your CEO is almost sort of your default chief people officer. Even when you do hire a people team, a lot of times, like, they are the ones that are your strongest champions or reinforcers, if you will, of your culture, of your operating principles. And so I think that would be incredible, especially with the transition of a lot of companies now working remotely or being a more distributed team more permanently. I'm sure we'll see the growth of a lot of new tools and virtual resources. And so I think it would be really cool if someone in the people space could co-found a company like that and bring their expertise, both technically as well as just in the sort of team building and morale aspect of building a company.
So for those unfamiliar with PROS, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you all do, as well as what the people team looked like when you joined, and then what it looks like today.
Sure. So PROS is a French-American company founded by three French co-founders. It is a hair care company, a personalized hair care company. So what's really innovative about it is that the customers all go and experience this consultative process. And through that process, your products then are formulated specifically to meet your individual needs. So rather than, you know, going to a store and shopping for just, you know, oily hair or dry hair, you actually can get a lot deeper than that through this consultation. And so we use data to continue to actually make that formulation even better and better to meet our customers' needs. So it's called our review and refine process. And so when the customer actually responds to a survey that asks them the questions about how is this product meeting your needs, that data all feeds into the review refine algorithm and continues to improve that formulation to make it even better over time. So it's really quite amazing. It's kind of a merge of technology with marketing and product design all together. I only started 5 months ago, but I was really happy to see that The people team was actually quite large, and we're actually going to increase next year with 2 additional recruiters to really build out our talent acquisition function. So when I started, I think it was 7 or 8, and then we'll be starting January with 2 additional team members. So it's going to be a team of 10. So that supports 150 employees. So I think if you look at that HR to employee ratio, it's really quite high. And I think it's great to see that because our leaders have really invested in the people function to really make sure that we are putting our people first.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's a complex business because, you know, you are direct to consumer. And so you're creating a lot of these custom formulas. And I think having a people team that is on the larger side enables you to really curate to the specific needs of your different employee groups and also helps you get ahead of scale. If, you know, you are growing quickly, then having a people team really think foundationally a lot about these core principles, philosophies, equitable design, as you've talked about. I think that helps you get ahead of fixing a lot of these problems that become a lot more deep-seated. So I think it's great that you have that investment. One of the things that I love about you is how social impact driven your core strategy is as you join a company and kind of think about how you're looking to build out the team and the various initiatives that, you know, you're looking to work on. And I find a lot of companies reacting to this need for social impact, diversity, equity, and belonging by trying to, you know, add a number of enablement programs, add a number of employee resources groups. And really at the core, you know, as you've said before, it's so much more integrated than that. And so how have you approached setting up that strong foundation and positioning yourself as a leader and positioning your team to be successful when building a truly equitable, inclusive, and social impact-driven company?
Yeah. Well, I think it really does need to be weaved into everything the company stands for. So a social impact strategy is not for all companies, and especially for behemoths that were established 100 years ago with a purpose just to make the highest profit for its shareholders. You can see how challenging it is for those types of companies to try and backtrack or create a standalone, you know, CSR department to somehow appease customers that now demand more from a social and environmental perspective. It's just nearly impossible. So I think it's not for all companies. The great thing about PROS, though, is that the 3 co-founders that established the company just 3 years ago are really great people with really great intentions. I think we all know that good intentions doesn't always lead to good outcomes, but it does start with good intentions. And I think these 3 leaders really have that. And the only reason why I joined PROS was because the CEO co-founder actually reached out to me and we had a good conversation. I had a few conversations with the leaders there and realized that if everything they were saying was true, then this would be the ideal setting for me to build a people team that could really support its employees by meeting their needs and their desires, and that we could really do some good by partnering with outside like-minded organizations who have been doing this work for decades. So I think for startups, I found that it's difficult for ERGs to be successful because, you know, although they may work better in large multinational corporations, for a startup with 100 employees or less, you would hope that you don't need to create an ERG for the Asian American group, the Black American group, or other minority groups. I think they're also likely going to be just a small handful of people just looking at statistics in the company. So there's not a lot of power in small numbers. However, I do think that a DEI council, a Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Council, can be really quite effective for startups as well. So if you have the right people involved. At PROS, we have established a DEI council. It's a group of 10, and we have a combination of people from senior leadership positions, as well as individual contributors and representing our offices in Paris, our manufacturing team, and our headquarters. It's really a diverse group, and it was really important that we had senior leadership members on the council so that we have decision-making power and sway, and that also important that we had a budget allocated to the council to really drive impactful initiatives. So this council now meets on a monthly basis, and we have a set of core goals that we've started for 2021. And it spans from, you know, how we hire and develop our people to how we continue to educate our employees and advocate for societal change by using our platform and the voice that we have in the broader beauty industry. So that's just one thing that we do to, you know, advocate for true, meaningful social impact.
Yeah, I think that's great because right at the beginning, you're involving so many different voices in how you're approaching your broader diversity, equity, and belonging strategy. You're really getting at the heart of what matters to your employees. And as you said, giving them a voice. I know that equity-centered design, democratic decision-making, these are all core parts of driving a culture of inclusion and belonging. And that's something that you think a lot about at PROS. And so how have you started to build your business with this in mind, specifically on the tactical sort of business end of things? How are your employees engaging in that sort of democratic decision-making?
So I think equity-centered design is really an amazing concept, and we have introduced it at PROS. So I've run a couple of company-wide workshops in equity-centered design where I introduce the concept of equity-centered design, which for people who don't know, it just builds upon design thinking. So it's about defining the problem, ideating, rapid prototyping, and testing and learning. But also, in addition to those core design principles, it adds on the aspects of acknowledging historical inequities, challenging traditional power norms, and inviting diverse co-creators into the design process. So when I ran these workshops at PROS company-wide, and then we broke out into Zoom breakout sessions, which actually worked quite well in a virtual setting, we chose a few topics that were really important to us at PROS. I asked our employees the question of, you know, where do we have the biggest opportunities from a diversity, equity, and inclusion standpoint? So we decided to focus on three topics, three general areas. So one was around leadership diversity. Another was around career development for our underrepresented employees. And then the third one was around recruitment. So after running this workshop, we came up with some really great proposals, really great ideas that were questioning the status quo. And so our plan is to review those proposals with the DEI Council and actually go ahead and implement some of those that we think are going to have the biggest impact. So I'm really excited about that as sort of a next step going into next year.
Yeah, that's really cool. What are some of the learnings that came from that, either on the recruiting side or on the career development side? Like, what was sort of surfaced through that exercise?
Yeah, I mean, I think around recruitment, actually two different teams working on that topic came up with the idea of blind recruitment. And actually, as we were going through this process, we also were giving feedback through our chat function in Zoom. And that's part of that testing and learning phase of equity-centered design. So that's really important that we receive the feedback. And actually, one of our employees pointed out that the term blind recruitment is really perpetuating, you know, this ableist kind of society, because what we're actually trying to say is that we don't know certain things about the candidate, like race or other things. So it's not, you know, that doesn't equate blind. So it was interesting that that feedback was given, which I think is a truly valid point. And it's sort of just showing the ideologies that are just so ingrained in our cultural norms and our language. So we certainly will not call it blind recruitment, but I think it's an interesting concept to think about, you know, taking off certain aspects of that candidate's core identities that may perpetuate some unconscious biases that hiring managers or recruiters have in the process. So I think we will certainly test that next year and see where that goes. You know, for me personally, I was never truly a fan of blind recruitment, just because I didn't think that that's where the root sort of causes of inequitable hiring actually lies. But we'll test it out, because I think it's an idea that's come from our employees and they have some great ideas. We'll test it out and we'll see what sort of outcomes we can actually see from that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've seen a lot of companies start to experiment with it. And I agree. I think it's definitely not something that addresses a root cause. And sometimes you can't always scrub everything, right? Like sometimes your identity itself can, you know, influence what types of schools you go to or what types of professional experiences you have. But I think it can be a great tool for educating your hiring managers or interviewers and using as kind of a reflective exercise, so that at some point you may not need to do that because you've, you know, given your team sort of that experience of, you know, this is what happens when we do kind of go through a blind sort of hiring process. And this is what we've learned. And now we don't need to do this anymore. And so I like the concept of experimenting with that. And then on the career development side, I know one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about, especially in, you know, the distributed world that we're all working in, is the concept of giving and receiving feedback in a way where, you know, you're not compromising psychological safety. I know that can be really challenging, especially if you are starting a new role virtually, which is the case for a lot of people now. And it's a lot harder to build those deep personal relationships with your manager, with your team, where, you know, you feel like, you know, this feedback is building me up and is intended to sort of help me as a person versus this sort of transactional, like, you know, what do I need to tell you so that you can get this job done kind of thing. And so how have you approached that, or how are you thinking about that as you're designing programs around, you know, feedback exchange in a way that, you know, is also sort of equitably designed, thinks about psychological safety and all those other things?
Yeah. I mean, I think that fundamentally managers have too much power. You know, we all say people don't leave a company, they leave their managers. So having a great manager can have such a meaningful impact to just a person's well-being at work. Whereas having a really bad manager can be the opposite, can be really, really detrimental. So I think managers have too much power and they have too much sway in the performance review process, the appraisal, as well as the salary review, the pay review process. So I think 360 feedback, although it's been around for many years, is really a valuable, impactful way to provide feedback, not just coming from the manager, but from truly the individuals, you know, the people that the individual works with on a day-to-day basis. So that type of 360 feedback, I think, is really important. And then it also allows the manager to see how this individual has been working and collaborating with others through that feedback. So I think that's really important to have integrated into the performance review process. And then in addition to that, I think there needs to be a way to calibrate and review the actual results. Because, you know, it's a subjective process. There's no way to really get around it. And different managers are going to have their own kind of subjective views on how they're evaluating their people. So I do think we just need to look at the overall results and calibrate and review and run analyses to see if there are any underlying inequities. And then in the future at PROS, I would like to get to a place where we can be completely transparent about pay. Because at PROS, our performance review connects to pay and bonus, salary increases and bonus. And so it's really important to make sure that there aren't any underlying inequities that exist there. Yeah. So I would like to get to a place where maybe we don't share the exact salaries of every single employee, but for every position that exists at PROS, we can share a range of what is equitable to market, and therefore what the individual is paid within that range. So we're not sharing, you know, exact salaries because that's very personal to each individual, but we are sharing that we have this process in place to really make sure that we are paying people equitably. So I would like to get to a place of salary transparency.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's really important because it empowers your employees to sort of speak up and have conversations around, you know, compensation because they understand how you're thinking about it. And it holds you accountable because, you know, if you do have an approach that you're able to communicate, that employees sort of know this is how you're thinking about it. And they're more comfortable kind of coming to you and holding you accountable for that. One of the things that you talked about, I feel like it's one of those sort of age-old questions that a lot of companies, you know, sort of navigate, which is, do I tie compensation to performance management? And so I'm curious sort of how you thought through that as you designed the program at PROS.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are pros and cons, and there's definitely two really differing philosophies around tying comp to performance or not. Fundamentally, I believe philosophically that pay for performance is what people want. So I think people want to be rewarded financially for doing well, or, you know, for if their peers are not going above and beyond as they are, their pay actually reflects that. So fundamentally, that's what I believe. And that's why I think we should connect pay to performance. However, you know, again, it's a very subjective process where managers have the most power. And so we do need to, as a people team, really run analyses and understand, you know, what's going on there to look for any underlying inequities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think especially early on too, as you are integrating 360 reviews and all these other components, those can take a lot of time, and having a very clearly communicated intention around, you know, this is why this is important, that can help get a lot of your employees on board. I know one of the most challenging things sometimes at early stage companies or growing companies is just communicating the value of that process and getting employees to spend the time on that when they have 20,000 other things to do. And so I really like the intentionality around that. So as you're talking through all of this, you've kind of taken a look at the way that PROS recruits, the way that you're thinking about, you know, performance and career development. A lot of companies are kind of going through these types of transformations right now, or, you know, if they're newer, thinking through how we want to build out our programs, taking a look at their own practices and their own processes and policies and realizing, yikes, there's just so much room for bias. There's so much room for error and inequity. And so what is your advice for companies navigating this type of transformation? Because you have generally people all over the spectrum. Some that, you know, kind of understand how these biases creep up, and some that are sort of newer to these concepts, and you're dealing with deep-seated habits and behaviors. And so what's your advice for companies that are going through some of these shifts right now?
I think going back to the idea around shifting power, historically, executives, senior leadership team members are the ones that have always had that ability to make decisions. And so if leaders are now trying to go through transformation right now with their own organizations, then I think they need to take a more inclusive approach to decision making and really questioning where power resides. So I think there are actually a lot of great ideas within companies. I mean, those leaders probably had a part to play in selecting all of the employees that now, you know, make that those companies. And so if they truly believe that these are the right people in their roles at that organization, then we should be listening to their ideas. And there are some great ideas that are probably there. When I was consulting and running a few workshops with other startups and introducing this concept of equity-centered design, what I actually was really pleasantly surprised to see was the depth, the breadth of ideas that come up that are really challenging the status quo. I was working with a startup company in the cannabis industry. The cannabis industry is really also notorious for perpetuating racial inequities. And so what actually came up out of this workshop were some great ideas on how this particular startup could partner with nonprofit organizations and the prison industry to really kind of look at how to restore social justice, racial justice, and how to really make an impact as one small organization. So again, I think a lot of great ideas exist within, and so leaders should really just be looking internally.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that kind of goes back to your point around the diversity task force or council, leaning on your sort of people leaders. And to that point, that kind of brings me to my last question, which is around, you know, what is your advice to other people in talent or people in culture, whatever you want to call it, professionals, as they do this work? There seem to be so many different areas and so many new sort of challenges and problems that we're facing now. And so what do you think is the most important thing that we can do for our organizations and teams?
I think if we can just recognize where we each individually hold power, and how we can influence within our own smaller spheres of influence, that will really make a huge impact. I think really we have to question everything, who benefits from our current structures, our processes, our policies. And usually it's the executives who are the ones who had the decision-making power. So we all understand that the status quo is really not working. And this concept of emergent strategy is also another one that I love, which basically just says that, you know, it's impossible to boil the ocean, but if you start small, and, you know, we often in the startup world talk about MVP, the minimum viable product. So if we start small and make a transformative change within maybe not the entire organization, but maybe one small team, five people, and really can prove the success of that transformative change, then that's your emergent strategy. And then that can really influence other teams and departments and longer term, the entire organization to really also follow that lead. So I think it's more of a mindset shift than anything else that I hope people can really start to experience.
I think that's phenomenal advice. I think if you think about it, this new modern age of people and culture really was born through that lens of, you know, how do we use our team to build people up, to support and enable them, thinking of their needs first and almost adopting that servant leadership, if you will, in our own roles, which is a stark contrast to the traditional world of HR that we're moving away from, which focused a lot more on butts in seats, output, stack ranking, and all of those types of things. So I think really taking a hard look of, you know, does this serve me or does this serve our employee base is a really critical lens. And I think especially as we start this year and think about how to drive change, it's a great reminder that all change has to start somewhere. And starting small and getting a feel for how people are responding, how people are feeling, and using that knowledge as you drive that change through the rest of your organization is a great way to really broaden the scope of your own impact.
Well, great, Diane. I really appreciate you taking time to come on the show and for sharing your story and your learnings along the way. And so really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed this so much. Thanks, Rasika.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more stories like this, please subscribe for the weekly drop and feel free to share around with your people and talent colleagues. I'd love your feedback, so please leave a review and let us know what you enjoyed and what types of topics you'd like to see covered in the future. The more reviews and subscribers we get, the more quality content we can consistently deliver to you. If you're interested in being on the podcast, feel free to reach out to me at rasika@engageandempower.org. See you next week!